Everyone, looks like it's going to be a cozy one, but hopefully that leaves plenty of time for questions at the end. Welcome to Informal Spaces. We do this every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, as long as Twitter Spaces allows us. Make sure you follow us on Twitter for a recap and then reminders of these so you can set your reminder. You can subscribe to our newsletter to get informed anytime we post a new blog or any news. And please join us on the forum for discussion on props. Just a little bit of housekeeping. This is not investment advice, so anything spoken about in this is just an insight into like what we're working on at Informal Systems. And please read the Informal Systems blog for more information on Ko-Fi and many of our other business units, and check out our YouTube for lots of content, including our community calls and some informal conversations that we have going. I would love to go ahead and get started. And we have Mark from our Informal Systems team, as well as Suarez. Mark, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'd love to. Thanks very much. So for those of you who I haven't had a chance to meet yet, my name is Mark. I joined Informal about 6 weeks ago as the product lead for Ko-Fi. My background is in engineering and business. And really happy to have an opportunity to talk a little bit about Ko-Fi.
Yay, thanks for being here. Suarez, would you like to give a quick intro of yourself?
Yeah, hi, my name is Suarez. I'm a technical lead at the Ko-Fi, and as well as I work on the Hermes Relayer. And I enjoy Rust programming in Rust.
Amazing, we have a Rustation in the house. So Mark, if you could give us a quick intro to Ko-Fi. Ethan has, you know, talked pretty extensively about like the historical background, but I think we'd love to know kind of, you know, how do we look at Ko-Fi in the present economy and industries?
Yeah, so I think the way that I've sort of internalized Ko-Fi in my time here is it's an initiative to help economies and businesses to run more efficiently, primarily through liquidity savings. I tend to think of Ko-Fi almost as an umbrella of techniques and concepts. I think the most prominent of those is obligation clearing, or what we call MTCS. But there's also liquidity injection, mutual credit, just other things that are in that bucket. But the overall mission and vision of Ko-Fi is always the same. It's about helping businesses by freeing up the gridlock that typically happens in supplier-customer relationships.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that like we talk about Ko-Fi, we have talked about Ko-Fi a lot in like the kind of like philosophical sense, but it's great to hear what we're trying to actually solve in the world right now. You know, you talked a little bit about like what we're enabling, but what kind of people do you think are like would be interested in Ko-Fi as an alternative payment system? Like what kind of industries or businesses?
Yeah, so I think that just about anyone can benefit from Ko-Fi. The idea of it is that it makes an economy run more efficiently, which is beneficial for almost everyone. But more specifically, I think it has the most benefit for companies that are facing cash flow issues. This is where I see a lot of benefit. So imagine that you're a supplier, you know, you have your own suppliers that you're getting goods from, you have customers. And typically for a lot of businesses, they use trade credits. So I sell you goods. I say, you don't have to pay me for the next 60 days. My supplier does the same. And, you know, this is a fairly common practice around the world. In Canada, the average payment length is, I was reading something, but it's around 71 days on average right now for Canada, which is pretty substantial. So you're waiting over 2 months for someone to pay you. and then for you to pay your supplier. It basically creates this gridlock within some of these supplier customer relationship chains, and you know that can generate cash flow issues for those suppliers that are stuck in the middle. So especially if my customer says, I need 90 days to pay you, but my supplier says, okay, you need to pay me in 30 days, this creates an imbalance. And it can be really detrimental to some businesses. I was reading another statistic that said in the US, of the majority of small businesses that fail as a result of cash flow issues. So, you know, this is a pretty big problem across the board. You know, there are solutions out there like invoice factoring, but that can be very expensive and create its own issues. So the idea of Ko-Fi is really to come in and to create liquidity so that, you know, these businesses don't have these types of cash flow issues.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of answered my next question, where like right now we talk a lot about how like the current financial systems are structured on kind of like game theory. And we're trying to move towards, you know, graph theory. Since you already kind of answered like the problems it solves, could you describe maybe graph theory versus game theory for us?
Yeah, you know, I think from game theory, right? As an individual business, you're focused on maximizing your gains, your individual gains. So, you know, in the relationship that I described earlier, you're going to wait to the very last possible minute to pay your invoice, which allows you to retain that capital. And, you know, you're going to try to push your customers to pay you as quickly as possible. You're going to try to get as much time to pay from your suppliers as possible. So the idea of game theory is it's almost incentivizing people to increase the gridlock in this system, which from a holistic point of view, you're actually working against the efficiency of the overall economy, right? Things are just running more slowly. Once you start to look at it more from a graph perspective, you start to see this visualized, and you know, my colleagues are great at putting together really beautiful graphs of visualizing all of these different dependencies. But what you can find in these graphs is that there are cycles where, hey, things are, you know, there's this giant loop, and if you could just get this money to move quicker, everyone in this loop, in this cycle, is going to benefit because they're going to reduce their liabilities. They're going to have more money to put towards better causes than trying to sit on it and wait to pay their invoices. So when you can look at it from the perspective of a graph, then you can start to find these cycles. You can start to try to optimize these cycles, which in turn creates a more efficient system. So a lot of this capital just starts to move more quickly. I think someone used the term velocity of money. And I think that really summarizes it, or tries to put it into perspective of, can we increase the velocity of this money? Because the movement of money is what's going to help. It's what's going to, you know, to generate more value as we keep making it run faster.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because that's a great point, where it's like people on an individual level are like trying to make themselves, you know, as cash rich, like hold as much capital as they can, because they don't want to lose in payments before they get paid. So I think Ko-Fi does a really great job, or we're trying to do a great job of kind of solving that problem. So like, how would you say, like, could you give us a real life example of a potential like loop? I know we call them loops internally, but like, could you give us an example of like how maybe like, I live in a place called Castro Valley, like the Castro Valley Commerce of, you know, business could implement Ko-Fi within the organizations that operate in our little town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, a small geography where you have a lot of businesses doing business with each other is a great opportunity for Ko-Fi. I mean, just as a quick tangent, you know, Slovenia, small country, but, you know, they have a very robust implementation of obligation clearing that works very well because all the businesses are doing business with each other. Trying to bring it down to, you know, a more practical example, You know, imagine you have three businesses, a construction company, a utility, and let's say a bakery. You know, so the baker invoices the construction company for something, the construction company invoices the utility company, and the utility company is invoicing both of them for, let's say, water. So all of a sudden, you're creating obligations between each other, sort of that desire or that need to pay off a certain debt. So what we can do is we can find cycles in these debts. So, you know, in this example, A owes B $100, B owes C $100, and C owes A $100. Now, in a traditional system, you would probably wait a month for A to pay B. Once B gets paid, they're going to use that money to pay C. Once C gets paid, they're going to use that money to pay A. So you can see that for that movement of money to occur, it could take, on average, let's say 3 months for all that money to work its way back to A, who, you know, is really like not gaining a lot of value waiting for all of this to occur. With obligation clearing, with collaborative finance, we can find those cycles, recognize, hey, you know what, in this cycle, everyone owes somebody else money. Why don't we just go in, call it a wash? So, you know, let's basically create a payment for $100 where everyone kind of agrees, okay, let's sort of even this all out. And then what that does is it lowers the liabilities for everyone, basically instantaneously, and then they can go and redeploy that capital somewhere else. And the interesting thing about this is that as you get larger communities, larger networks, you start to find cycles where you have four or five different entities in that cycle. And the interesting part is that, you know, I as a business in that cycle that's, you know, finding ways to improve my liquidity situation, I'm gaining benefit from companies that I've never worked with, that I may not even know, which is really exciting because it's just creating all of these beneficial externalities. Everyone in the system is winning, money is moving quicker, and you know that I think is what we're really trying to achieve. And you know, it's this idea of building an atomic network where you can generate all of this value, and it's It's an exciting possibility in what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think it's interesting because we've been talking about like how this all works, and theoretically, right? Like people could do this on their own, like that bakery and the construction company and the utility company could like get their CFOs together and say we're going to do this. But what we're trying to build at Informal Systems is I don't know if you want to call it a platform, but a solution so that people can do this on a small scale, but also on a large scale, right? Could you talk a little bit about like the work that we are specifically doing to enable this to happen?
Yeah, definitely. And I think you're right. Like in a small scale, in a very localized area, you could try to do this. But I think part of the power of it is recognizing those cycles that involve companies you may not even know about. So the larger the network, the more connections you have, the more powerful collaborative finance becomes. So, you know, right now what I'm really working with the team on is trying to build a minimum viable product. You know, I'm very much of the school of thought that when building a product, we should, you know, iterate and learn. So what we're trying to do is build a minimum viable product that we can try and we can learn. And that will hopefully be a bit of a test bed. In parallel, what we're also building out is an API layer where we can start to partner with other organizations that can utilize collaborative finance, obligation clearing in a much more tightly coupled way. So we're trying to think about, again, how to build this atomic network, because ultimately, you know, we need to find enough companies and enough invoices to make it effective. So, you know, that's really where we're striving towards right now.
Yeah, that's awesome. And do you imagine this to be like an app, a website? Like, how would this look to the person who's looking to use it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that's something we're really trying to explore right now. The first, as I said, the first instantiation of this, the MVP that we're building out right now, will be a web app. But the, you know, building it more holistically, I think that the power will come by providing different businesses, different companies, different ways to use it. And, you know, we may explore, again, tighter integrations with invoice software. We may explore sort of direct access through an API or a mobile app. So right now, from a product perspective, it's really about finding out how can we make collaborative finance something that is easy to use, that fits into your particular invoicing system as seamlessly as possible. My goal is that, you know, you should be able to, at a certain point, just be able to flip a switch and get benefit from it without having to do much, if any, work, you know, manually reconciling things. So that's my goal.
Yeah, I think that's like what people are looking for, is like, how do we use this thing? Because there's been so much buzz around us like developing this thing. So it's good to hear like what we're building. Just to bring it a little bit back to like some of our core work, how do you see blockchain technology enabling Ko-Fi?
Yeah, I'll do my best on this, and maybe Soraya's can help to supplant anything that I missed. The advantages I see from blockchain are sort of threefold. First, Cosmos specifically has an amazing reach. As I mentioned earlier, part of the power of collaborative finance is the ability to build is about building a large network where you can find more and more cycles. So having a global ecosystem to build on top of is incredibly enticing, right? We want as many people to be able to use Ko-Fi as possible. The second advantage about running on the blockchain is credible neutrality. You know, we're running this algorithm, and we want people to be confident that it is fair, that it is unbiased, and putting it on a blockchain in a secure way, and making sure that everyone can basically validate that it has been run fairly is going to be an important aspect. Last thing that I would call out is definitely security. You know, we're integrating ourselves into the finances of companies. It's very sensitive. We want to be very careful that we're doing it in a secure manner, especially as we start to manage more movement of money. And this is where, again, a blockchain has advantages over a centralized server. Initially, we'll probably go with a more centralized solution just in terms of speed. But our plan is definitely to migrate that to a blockchain and reap all of those benefits. Maybe Soraya, if there's anything I've missed, feel free to jump in.
Yeah, I can maybe put it in another way. So at a fundamental level, this finding cycles and doing this liquidity savings or obligation clearings, if you think about it, it's actually also a consensus problem. So a nice way to think of it is that when people might be able to find these cycles on their own, and they may be able to clear it. So let's say A owes B, and then B owes C and C owes A. Then yes, if the participants identify these cycles themselves, they can potentially solve this. But let's say what happened if there is also another cycles from A to B and to D and back to A. So in this case, how do you decide whether you want to go with the cycle ABC or the cycle ABD? And if you do this just in a naive peer-to-peer way, then you could come out with trying to clear with both cycles, which is actually a variant of this double spend problem. And so blockchain, as we know, is a way to solve this kind of double spend problem. And of course, if we look at the centralized solution, it is actually also provide this way as a an alternative way or like a mainstream way for us, for participants to reach this kind of consensus. And with the risk of centralization, you have to think about what happened when these scales to hundreds of billions of dollars of transaction. If a single centralized party is controlling this platform, then there is a risk of this centralized party gaining too much power. And if we look into the technology that's provided by Cosmos, it actually provides a great way for this platform to be owned by all the participants through this proof of stake, which also reduces the risk of centralization and makes it neutral and benefits everyone.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I think a lot of people beforehand had asked about like how Cosmos ties into it. So I thank you for answering that ahead of time. That was awesome. I'm going to go into some audience questions from last time. But if anyone in the audience has any questions now, like, please feel free to raise your hand and I will promote you as we go through this. Someone had asked last time, is CoFi just refinancing in a circle? How do we feel about that question?
Yeah, I don't think it's refinancing. Refinancing is almost like adjusting the terms of a lending agreement. Really, what you're doing here is you're actually reducing the amount being lent through a trade credit system. So it's almost like reducing whatever that financing was initially, as opposed to updating the terms of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Could you like maybe go into like a little bit more detail about, like, you said it's like changing the terms of an agreement, but like theoretically you could say that CoFi is changing the terms of the payment agreement, right? So like maybe a little bit more differentiation there.
Yeah. I mean, think about it from, let's say, you know, I issue you an invoice. I say you have 60 days to pay. And it's for $100. A few days later, CoFi, the algorithm runs and it finds a cycle where, you know, that invoice is part of a clearing cycle or a set off of $50. So the original invoice kind of remains. It's still valid. But what you would do is you would say, okay, there's a partial payment of $50 on that invoice. So now, you know, the terms of the agreement still remain. You still have whatever remaining days to pay from the 60, but the amount that you owe me now is only $50. And, you know, this is advantageous because, for one, CoFi almost coincides with all of the existing invoicing systems and payment systems you already have in place at your company. We're not telling you to pay in a different way of that remaining 50. We're just saying, hey, we've reduced that amount by offsetting it from some other invoice that you know you have made to a different company. So it's really interesting from that perspective of, you know, we're trying. It's almost like a non-invasive way to improve your cash flow. You know, really, the only thing that you have to do is recognize that after that set off comes in, it appears as a, you know, a payment or a partial payment on an existing invoice. Is that a little clear?
Yeah, I think that's great. Thank you for that. And I'm sure, I forget the handle of the person who asked it last time, but they are greatly appreciative of that. Robert B., thank you for joining us. Do you have a question for us?
Hi, I do. Thank you for bringing me up, Suarez and Mark. It's nice to chat, and it's nice to meet you guys as well. I've been interested in collaborative finance for some time now, since Cosmoverse last year. And this has been a question that's on my mind, so I'm glad I can ask it. And please forgive me if I get some of the diction wrong. I'm still trying to understand it, and feel free to correct me as well. The idea I have, or the question that I have, centers around three businesses that are in this cyclical agreement, and they have $100, let's say, that they all owe to each other, right? For the chain that would clear that debt or obligation that you guys say, wouldn't it need to be a very private chain? And would it, and how would it ensure the privacy of these companies, but also prove that the debt is on their balance sheet? Does that make sense?
I think that's a great question. You're asking about, like, how do you maintain privacy while also keeping people accountable?
That's exactly what I'm asking. Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah, I can answer that. So privacy is one of the concerns that we have been working on solving since the start of the project. So yes, you are right that with the current way the blockchain works, if you just post the obligation as a plain transaction to the blockchain, that would mean that everyone would be able to see it, and that would mean that the transaction of the activity of the business would be visible. So to solve that, we are looking into various the privacy technology, which some of which you may be familiar. So we look at into try maybe solving this with homomorphic encryption or with this multi-party computation. So these are kind of like the ideal solution that we would like to have, and we are currently like researching about the feasibility for this, and also in the midterm, we also look into the use of this trusted execution environment, or TEE, so that all these. All this transaction data, they are in encrypted inside this TE enclave, so that there's no single party that can access this data. Of course, all these are different privacy model. They come with different properties and various trade-offs. So we try to combine these different options in a way that can give us the maximum privacy that we want to provide. And of course we also look into using zero knowledge proofs for proving about these the result of running this private computation. Because as you can imagine, if all this graph transaction data, they are encrypted inside the TE, then how do you know that what the TE produced is a correct result? So this is where we can make use of the ZK proofs, so that we can prove about the validity of this graph and set off without having to review about the data. We are also working with other blockchain technologies companies, including Anoma and Penumbra, and we are sharing all this our experience to try to figure out the best way to build this blockchain.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it, Soren.
Awesome. That was a great question, Robert. Do you have any other questions or feedback?
No, that's just my one. I've just been enjoying listening and keep on putting these spaces on because I think they're very valuable for the community.
Oh, thank you. We really appreciate that. Thanks for joining us. Are there any other audience questions? I know like half the folks in the spaces are people from informal systems. So if you have any questions, please let us know. While we wait for any stragglers, Mark, last question for you. When can we expect an MVP?
Good question. Always one that I'm cautious to answer, but the team and I have our sights set on having an MVP by the end of the quarter, so end of September. How minimally viable that will be and what will be included is still up for debate, but yeah, my, you know, as I said, my hope is to get something tangible that we can play with, that we can use, that we can test as soon as possible. We'll probably try to test it internally and informal first. But yeah, my hope is that, you know, as we start to go into the fall, we'll have something that we can open up to the community for testing.
Awesome. And I know like you and I specifically are working on that, but currently if somebody is interested, how should they reach out to the Ko-Fi team?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, you can reach out directly to the members of the Ko-Fi team. You can reach out through informal. You know, Robert asked some great questions. If there's any more of those, me or anyone on the Ko-Fi team would be happy to help with that. So, yeah, I don't know if there's a direct way to do that through Twitter. Not a huge user of Twitter, but yeah, however those get funneled, always happy to continue the conversation.
Awesome. Yeah, shoot us a DM or something on Twitter, and I try to check those pretty frequently. And then, you know, we can connect through either Slack or email or whatever works best. But I think we will wrap this one up. It was short and sweet, but hopefully very impactful. And we'll be doing more of these in the future. So thank you for joining us. And thank you, Soros. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Robert, for taking the time to speak. And we will catch you on the flip side.
There's this principle in Taoism where it's like the more you fight something, the more like the opposite of what you want, like just inevitably kind of starts to happen. There's this principle in like Taoism where it's like the more you fight something, the more like the opposite of what you want, inevitably it kind of starts to happen.
Chirping on the bird app, listening to nerd slap, wondering why the fuck my timeline's so cursed. It's like everybody's holding heavy bags in Web3. That's why they can't fly, they just drowning in the bird bath, fishing for some dry powder. Watch how we ignite the tower, blowing up their bank accounts for getting out of fight the power. Y'all don't even realize how deep this shit goes. They preach an open source, but don't listen to the code, and now it's mutiny, community, uprise. There's no more humility, futility, plus size. Motherfuckers leaking from the wrench down to the bare metal. Which side of the line you bleeding out on when the dust settles? Motherfucking west side shit, needle and noose. Sticking with my armory, Yambato and Bruce. Repping psychedelic artistry, believing the truth. Like these motherfuckers even need a reason to sue? GM fam.
Is it really worth all the effort? Is it really worth all the fighting? The drama? And the answer, I think, is clear now.
They started using Zoom, now we finna zoom out, teaching all these plebiscites what this game's really all about. Little baby bitches when they choose to have fits, all you're left with is kibble when you lose all them bits. And that kibble's just sawdust, the shit is all rust. Not a great look, you're what we'd call all nuts. And I for one did not see that coming. Cracking open books, yo, that's a lot of money. Meanwhile over here rewiring features, more critical thinking, huh? Less knee-jerk, more evolution, less shit coin preachers pretending to be teachers. Y'all just predatory leeches. I mean, please, just look at the track record. A bunch of VC rat fucks sucking up the cheddar. The recipe is two steps, rinse and repeat. Now we all in your butts and we bring in receipts. GM fam, have a seat.
If you're listening to this, my plea to you would be like, don't have to take a side on it. Just say like, is it really worth this war of attrition? It might cost us a lot more than what can be gained by like fighting this to the better end. And sometimes it's better to just like move on.
Terror Spaces.